As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell. I almost forgot it there. With me today to talk about the Bundesliga's summer so far is a person who, much like Carmen Sandiego, a reference I'm not sure he will get, could be anywhere in the world at any given time. It's Manuel Veit. Manuel, thank you for being here. Good to have you back. Are you in Germany, Canada, or the United States right now?
I am in Canada for the next...
Okay.
12 hours.
See, exactly.
Oh, 16 hours. And then I'm leaving again. Yeah, I arrived last night at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oof.
I had 5 hours of sleep, then straight into my work is really nice. They have these like afternoon meetings on their time just so I can actually sleep till 7 o'clock. So I had a meeting this morning. I got up at 7. I had a couple points. I don't know how perky I sounded, so if anyone from work listens to this podcast, I apologize. And then I'm doing the Canadian Championship final today, so I'm flying over to Vancouver this afternoon. I'm staying in Vancouver tonight, and then I'm flying over to Germany to do the EFL Super Cup, and then I'm coming back on August 1st, and then I think the world is not going to hear or see from me for 48 hours.
Oh, that's exciting. Is that a deliberate thing, or are you like taking yourself off the radar for negative?
I think after working for 15 or 16 days straight, I think I need a break.
That's fair. Well, I appreciate that in all of that busy chaos, you have found the time to talk to me about the Bundesliga, because I have many questions for you. It's been quite the summer. We've talked about some of these moves previously, but we will revisit a few of them. Last time, I think you were on, we started with some of the smaller teams.
Yeah.
This time we're going straight to Bayern Munich because it's been a pretty busy summer, and it sounds like it will continue to be a busy summer for them. Starting off with last season, in your mind, what did you feel like were some of the major weaknesses in Bayern's squad, and how much do you feel like those vulnerabilities have been addressed this summer?
I mean, a lot of the talk was about defense, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone ever really worried about the attack. Obviously, with Robert Lewandowski gone, that is an issue now. And it remains to be seen whether they did address that the right way. I think they're sort of experimenting with that, right? And that's been the main topic of this Bayern Munich US tour that I was part of, was I think we all asked anyone who we could ask. I think the Bayern bosses and players must be so sick and tired of us journalists asking about how they're going to replace 50 goals. And at some point, the players even like just went there straight without us asking. But I think this is a really big question, right? And that is not something that was an issue last season, but is an issue now, because you lose one of the two or three best number nines on the planet. The question needs to be asked, how are you going to replace 50 goals that Robert Lewandowski scored every year, right? And I think the approach that they're sort of going about, I find really fascinating, and I've written quite a bit about it over this last week, including in, if you haven't seen it yet, Tyler, we have a new Bundesliga gegenpressing Substack.
I have not.
Stefan and I, yeah. So we have some additional, obviously we're still doing the podcast, which is free. And then we do an additional podcast, which is behind the paywall. And then each of us write an article, once a week. So it's 3 pieces of content. And the one Substack that I wrote last week was about this very topic on how do Bayern Munich replace 50 goals a season. And I think I'm not quite sure yet if they're able to do it. Sadio Mane obviously comes in from Liverpool. He looked really good in the US at that game against DC United, right? Scored his first goal right away from the spot. Serge Gnabry renews his contract until 2026. And I think the expectations are that he will chip in a lot more goals. His buddy Joshua Kimmich actually said that, you know, Gnabry has to be one of the players to benefit from Lewandowski departing, because he's obviously getting a lot more game time in that front role. And I think they're going to play with two false number nines, almost, with Mane and Gnabry at the front. And I think then the question mark is, are those two going to be able to replace the goals? And then they brought in Matthijs Tel from Stade Rennes for an enormous amount of money for a 17-year-old. Once all the add-ons are hit, he's going to be the most expensive 17-year-old in the history of the game. And I think the idea is that you sort of have him grow in the shadow of those false number nines, and that you bring him in to play a center forward role, right? But I mean, the big question here is it enough? And if it's not enough, and Nagelsmann alluded to this in the press conferences that we were at, and Antonio Conte was not happy about that, obviously, because this Harry Kane is in the back of everyone's mind at the moment. And are Bayern Munich going to go after him next year if this doesn't work out? So that's, I think, a really big question. And then the other one is defense. Matthijs de Ligt, not Matthijs Tel. There's a lot of Matthijs coming in.
Sorry, I'm really happy that you're doing it, because I had in my notes, I don't know how to pronounce many of these names. So I'm glad that you're doing it first.
It's Matthijs Tel, yeah. And I think I got that wrong. Yeah. And it's Matthijs de Ligt.
There we go.
I think.
I was going to ask, if things don't go well to start the season, is there a chance that if Harry Kane isn't available, Bayern will go back on what they were saying and maybe inquire about Cristiano Ronaldo? Or do you feel like that ship has sailed? He will not be playing for Bayern no matter what.
I hate to deny that transfer. I personally don't think it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. One of the great things about this tour is that we had opportunities to speak with a lot of the decision makers off the record. Hasan Salihamidzic wasn't there, obviously, because he was doing all these transfers. He was supposed to go on the US tour, but he was busy signing De Ligt, and then he was busy to sign Tell, right? So he didn't come. But Oliver Kahn was there. Herbert Heiner was there. Jung was there, who was the director of marketing and branding. Actually, everyone was there, and we had the chance to fly with them from DC to Green Bay, and then obviously spent some time with them at various events. And there was a lot of off the record talk. And when you read between the lines and some of the things that were mentioned, Cristiano Ronaldo really wants to join Bayern Munich. He really does. He is pushing very hard to leave Manchester United. And I don't think he has many options to go somewhere where he can right away win another title. I think it's enticing to him to win another top four league title, right? Because it would be England, Spain, and then Germany. And then I think, right, which one am I missing? England, Germany, Spain. Oh, he's won Italy too. So he would have won all four, right? And I think that's sort of what he's going after. And then, of course, he would also be right away in a Champions League, that team that could win the Champions League. The problem with Cristiano Ronaldo is, while he is an enticing prospect in terms of what you would do with marketing, and I think if Bayern had done it, they would have done it during this US tour, right? You walk out at Lambeau Field in front of 80,000 people and announce Cristiano Ronaldo. That's the way to do it, in my opinion. But I think there's been a couple articles written on this, including an excellent article in The Athletic. And I'm sorry for this because I really can't remember who wrote it. So I apologize. That showed that he's made every team worse in the last two teams gotten worse when he joined, right? Mm-hmm. First Juventus and then Manchester United. Even though he chips in a lot of goals, he means that there is a lack of productivity in other areas. And also his defensive contribution sucks. It's terrible. I mean, I think you're a Man United fan, right?
I am.
So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't really do the defensive side. He also doesn't strike me as a person who, at this point in his career, wants to do things that are well outside of his kind of quote-unquote norm. So I think Ten Hag coming in and demanding more of the entire team, both on and off the pitch, I'm not sure if that's a thing he is necessarily going to love. I feel like he would have previously at a younger point in his career. And certain things like no drinking during the week, I think he's already sort of done away with. So I don't think that's as big of an issue. But I feel like overall, there's an element of I'm Ronaldo. You can't tell me what to do. I'll tell you what to do. And I'm not sure that fits with what the club is going for now. I'm not sure he makes them better on or off the pitch.
Yeah, so I think that answers the same question when it comes to Bayern, right? With Julian Nagelsmann, you get the same thing. But then again, you don't want to rule it out.
If they don't bring in Ronaldo, though, let's say like with the players they have now, they obviously do not have Robert Lewandowski, as you've already mentioned. Rafa Honigstein wrote a good piece for The Athletic as well about sort of Lewandowski, the player, but also Lewandowski and how he... I think the contention was never fully connected to supporters of Bayern Munich and to even some of his teammates, that he was this incredibly important player, but at the same time, maybe won't be as remembered as some of the Bayern Munich greats. How do you feel like he'll be remembered by the Bayern Munich faithful?
Yeah, I mean, Rafa would, I can't disagree with anything he writes. He's an institution himself, right? As a journalist. And it was really interesting that we had Pavel Wilkowitz on our Gegenpressing show, which I think if you're interested in the man Lewandowski, you should probably still listen to that because it's still very much on point. Pavel Wilkowitz is the Polish journalist who wrote Lewandowski biography. And it's an excellent listen. I don't say much on it. Pavel does all the talking, and as he should, because he knows Robert better than probably most people. And I think he said a lot of these things as well, that Rafa wrote in his article. It echoed a lot of the same sentiment, right? And it comes to Lewandowski's, I can't really express it as well as Pavel did. And so I really do recommend people to listen to this who are interested. But it comes down to the fact that for Robert Lewandowski playing for a certain club, that's a job. Scoring goals is a job. He said to Pavel once that he's never going to kiss the badge of a club because the club, if he's not needed at the club anymore, will just as easily discard him as he would just move on if the opportunity arises. And so there was never really that emotional connection. And we had the same thing at Dortmund, right? Before that. So I think because of that, he's not going to be remembered in the same vein than Gerd Müller, whose record in a single goal scoring season he broke, of course. But I do think that a few years will go down and he will become someone that will be positively remembered at the club. And I think the divorce was very messy, but I think in the end there was a solution found that made everyone happy. Bayern Munich got 45 million euros for a player who we don't know how much longer he's going to be able to play. And Lewandowski got his move to Barcelona, although he's yet to be registered.
That old conundrum. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully for him, they can figure that out. But I think between Bayern and Lewandowski, that's all sorted. And I think that in a few years' time, people will look back positively and say, okay, well, he's not one of the legends, but he's a legend. And yeah.
I think also like his that mentality, that approach of like not kissing the badge, they'll find somebody else if I'm not doing my job, is correct. That is sort of the way it tends to go in football. So it's a strange one where, though the sentiment that he's expressing or the belief he has is maybe not going to endear him to like football fans around the world, at the same time, he is correct. It is a business. That is how it operates. And he is a commodity. And maybe that's, I think we talked about this last time, sort of put on display when they're courting Erling Haaland while still technically negotiating with him. I think there's a feeling of, oh, okay, like, we both sort of understand it's a marriage that doesn't work for us anymore, basically, is I think what the agreement was. Are they moving in that direction, do you feel like, with Lucas Hernandez, who I think prior to De Ligt was their major, I guess he is still their record signing at 80 million euros. But is the De Ligt signing maybe a sign that that was not money well spent at this point?
I don't know. I think that there is a feeling that De Ligt could actually help Hernandez. And I mean, it remains to be seen how much, how fast they can get De Ligt up to speed. He scored a gorgeous goal against DC United and came on, but then really struggled with fitness. And Julian Nagelsmann, who probably stepped on every single verbal landmine there was at during this time in the US, I think he upset Barcelona, Tottenham, and Juventus in quick succession with his various comments. And that's a story in itself. He said that when you don't play in Italy, it's hard to keep up your fitness, alluding to the fact, of course, that they don't train very hard there. I don't know. I've heard this before in the past about other players, so there must be some truth to it. But as a coach at Bayern Munich, you better not say it. It was quite obvious that in De Ligt's case, that was true. His fitness wasn't really up. Bayern Munich worked really hard in Washington, and you notice it's hot there.
Yep.
This time of the year. I'm a huge fan of the heat, but it was hot. It was really hot. And of course, he comes in 48-hour whirlwind transfer, and he comes in and then goes in a training session, and they do sprint training, and then he plays for 20, 25 minutes and just basically is done, right? And they had to take him off. Played 40 minutes in the second game. There is some work to be done, and the season technically starts this Saturday in Leipzig, right? But to answer your question, I think he is brought in to help Hernandez. This is who they are, I think, sort of feeling is going to create a new backbone at the club. It's a very expensive center pair signing, as center pair couple, isn't it? Hernandez at 80 and De Ligt comes in at 67 plus. Oh, I can't remember the add-ons, but it's still a significant signing. And when you add that together, it's an expensive center pair. And then you add Pavard in there as well, who, interesting enough, Lucas Hernandez said he really wants him to stay because there's all sorts of rumors about him, right? So, I think I don't see this as De Ligt coming in replacing Hernandez. I see this as De Ligt coming in to maybe replace someone like Niklas Süle, but also to be a player profile that is very much complementary to what Hernandez can offer.
Final question on this topic then. Does that mean, okay, if it's not Hernandez, does that mean that the Upamecano transfer hasn't gone as swimmingly as maybe Nagelsmann would have hoped?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I know all sorts of media in Munich kind of downplayed this, because I tweeted this, and then shortly after, a bunch of media in Germany said, well, it's not true, without reading what I actually tweeted. The matter of fact is that Dayot Upamecano's representative changed agencies and took him with him to Unique. They were at Sports 360, the German agency, big German agent Struth, who represents all sorts of bigger players, and she took him to Unique. And I talked to some people in the industry, other agents, and the way they explained it to me is the following. this doesn't mean he's looking for a Premier League move now, but Unique is an agency that is very strong in the Premier League market. And the way they explained this to me is if a player moves agencies, not necessarily their representatives, but agencies, that's always an indication that the player is not 100% satisfied with his current situation. And at least two agents told to me, keep an eye on this, because while this doesn't mean he's going this year, if things do not go as planned for the Upamecano camp, he will push for a transfer. And that's what I reported, right? I said medium term. That doesn't mean now, doesn't mean maybe this winter, but if he's in a situation next summer where he says, wow, Hernandez and De Ligt are playing a lot and I'm not, then he's definitely going to push for a move. And this is why these agency changes are always really interesting, because they do indicate that the player is unhappy.
All right. Well, Upamecano might be unhappy. Hopefully listeners are not hearing us talk about the Bundesliga, or specifically Manuel talk about the Bundesliga. But we will be back in just a short break to hear more about. We're going to go to Dortmund next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. Welcome back. We've talked plenty about Bayern Munich. There's still plenty more we could talk about, but we should talk about a few of the other clubs in the Bundesliga. I think it's safe to say Bayern Munich will be in that top four. I feel like it's safe to say they're going to be near the top of that table.
Top two, at least.
Yeah, I would say so. I have a feeling they might end up winning the title again, Manuel. Shock of all shocks. Where do you have Dortmund in your estimations? Let's just, generically speaking, how are you feeling about Dortmund right now?
I felt very good about them. And
felt until, past tense? There it is, yeah.
Yeah, because obvious. I mean, the big one is the Sebastian Haller shock, right? Mm-hmm. The diagnosis. We don't know the exact diagnosis. We're expecting. I'm actually checking my phone real quick just to make sure I didn't miss it. And I don't think we have a result by the time of recording. It's a shocker, and it's sad because it's the second one that we had in this offseason. Baumgartel, who joined Union Berlin, had the same, a tumor in the testicles, right? And we don't know whether it's cancer or not until the results come back or how bad it is. I mean, best case, it's malign. It's a quick operation. Recovery, and he will be a factor this year. Worst case, it's not, and then we don't know. And I think that hangs over the club like a big black cloud at the moment. And the timing for it, I mean, the timing for this is always bad. You know, that's a shock for any team and for the environment of a team. But you know, this coming just before the season, and they spend a lot of money on him as well, and he was supposed to be the centerpiece that will bring them all together. And I felt really positive about Dortmund's attack, the chemistry of the team, what he adds to a very young forward group that has a lot of talent already. But that all became secondary nature with just one diagnosis, right? And so this is why I said felt. I do feel that the signings that they made without this, the team looks really good. It's they brought in Adeyemi, who I think is an enormous talent. Nico Schlotterbeck, one of the most talented defenders in German football. Niklas Süle, who I actually think is a fantastic signing for them. They addressed all their weaknesses, right, in defense. Salih Özkan comes in from Köln, where I think is a great defensive central midfielder who will give them that necessary grit in midfield. Haller is sort of the player that, without necessarily giving them the same production, is still the same kind of player type than Erling Haaland in a lot of ways, while also making sure that their productivity isn't dependent on just one player. And I think because of that, I looked at this and I said, like, yeah, they will have a chance this year. And then now I don't know.
Yeah, and I had actually missed the Haller news, so thank you for mentioning that. So for people who also missed it, basically said he was feeling unwell in training, did a medical scan. They found the tumor on his testicle. He, I think, has now had it removed, or at least part of it removed, but I don't know if it has been reported the severity, if it's benign or malignant. So we shall wait and see. But I guess that is that reminder, of course, that there are far more important things than signings and preseasons and the like. So with no Haller there with them, how do you feel like Edin Terzic will sort of deal with that? And what do you make of Edin Terzic being back in charge? I think this is now his fourth different position with Dortmund, having been like an assistant manager, a caretaker manager, the technical director. Now he's the head coach officially. What are your thoughts on him getting that job?
Well, I think it was always poor Marco Rose, right?
Can we start with that? Yeah, what happened with Marco Rose? Because that was one that I think we were both very excited about, thought it was going to be the smartest signing, and now here we are. He is no longer in charge.
I mean, the end in Gladbach maybe should have given us some indication of which direction this could go. And then, of course, the fact that Edin Terzic did so well with them, win the German Cup last year, and then gets promoted to be Marco Rose's boss. And we all know that if things go sideways with Marco Rose, he comes in right away and replaces him, right? And that's exactly what happened. And yeah, I think this was one of those odd things that when Dortmund did sign Marco Rose, it was the perfect fit. But because of what happened in between the signing and Marco Rose actually taking over, it was an awkward fit. And I think it came down to, while the results were right, the matter of the results were not. And that bothered a lot of people in Dortmund. And I think in Edin Terzic, they sort of fell in love with a guy that they would have liked to. It's like dating two people at the same time, isn't it?
That's always a good way to start a relationship, right? And that getting, should go well.
And then getting married while you're actually in love with the other person.
Oops.
And this
Don't
is sort
that.
Of
Don't
a
that.
Good analogy of this, I think. Because like, then you're, I think, halfway, really early on in your marriage, you realize, like, no, actually, I love this other person. And then you get a divorce and get married to the other person instead. This is sort of, I think, what happened here. And it's... I just think it was doomed. Now in retrospect, and hindsight is 2020, isn't it? But
yeah.
I think this was always doomed. When you hear some of the things that have now come out and been said, I just think that Edin Terzic was the guy from the moment he won the German Cup, and Marco Rose never had a chance.
Do you feel like Terzic has the sort of support of the squad at this point, or has he always?
Oh,
do you feel
yeah.
like he's a pretty popular figure?
Yeah, I think that was the other thing. I think the players actually wanted him to. So, you know, it was, I think, hard for Rose. And the players obviously really liked him. Marco Reus really likes him. Giovanni Reyna really likes him. Yosuva Moukoko really likes him. So I think that's a bunch of guys already that would rather work with the other guy, right? And that's just brutal. Like, how are you supposed to succeed in that?
Yeah.
You can't. It's not possible. And so here we are. We got Edin Terzic back, and it's now his, and he has to prove that he has what it takes to actually, you know, although, I mean, I guess now with the whole Sebastian Haller news, that puts it into a bit of a different light. But this is his now. This is his club. And the club has given him the keys to it and said, we fully trust you. You are a man. And we want you to take this forward. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, not on an interim basis, full time, blank check. Here you go.
Man, it's interesting to me. I wasn't planning to ask you this question for every single team in Germany, but if you don't have Haller, let's say that they give him the entire season to recuperate, and maybe that won't end up being necessary. But if it were, and they needed a short-term replacement who's a proven goal scorer at international level, Cristiano Ronaldo also is still very much there. But I feel like for the exact same reasons we've already discussed, if you have Terzic coming in, maybe some of the cloud is gone. Maybe there is a happier vibe around that locker room, around the training camp. I don't know if bringing in Ronaldo is going to necessarily make things better or decrease the drama very much.
Well, it has been reported Mendes is pushing for clubs. There's clubs in Germany, plural. I don't think it's Dortmund. I think they have a couple other players in mind. Mm-hmm. They've been linked to Mauro Icardi. Oh,
that's so interesting.
I know. I thought so too. And then there's Piątek from Hertha, who they also thought of bringing. I think none of this is going to even be a topic until we know what happened, what's going on with Sebastian Haller, right? So there's a lot of speculation. And I think this is really important to keep in mind. There's a ton of speculation at the moment. If Sebastian Haller's diagnosis is that he is going to miss a significant part of the season, let's hope not. We don't know. By the time of the recording, we just don't know, right? Mm-hmm. Then I do think they're going to do something because they have to. And it will be someone who will be available on a free or will be relatively cheap or someone else wants to offload. And it could be all sorts of players.
That's interesting because you're right. That does sort of like change the way their recruitment process will work. So we can hold off on that one. We can just hope for the best for Haller. Yeah. My final question for you on Dortmund. You mentioned him previously. Will this be the season of Gio Reyna? Your answer options are definitely yes or probably yes.
I hope so.
That wasn't an answer. It's definitely yes or probably yes, Manuel. It has to be one or the other. No, okay, you hope so.
I hope so. He's worked really hard in off-season, right? He went to Austin, I think, to work really hard. There was a rumor in the Scottish press that he might go on loan to Rangers, and I was able to shut that down really quickly. And Terzic really likes him, but this comes down to his body finally doing what he wants his body to do. And that's not always up to the individual player, but I do know he worked really hard and he looked really good in preseason from what I've been told. And so you just hope his body doesn't strike on him again. I think that's, we all know that he's extremely talented. I know that we all know that Erling Tisic really likes him. And we all know that he's going to play a significant role when he's fit. It's just down to his body.
Leipzig would be the other like potential title candidate, but they have had an interesting summer themselves. They've brought in Xaver Schlager. I'm sure I'm butchering that one. Promoted a bunch of academy products. They've also sold 5 players for a combined total of over 70 million euros. Do you think Tedesco is happy with the squad as it is, or are you expecting more reinforcements? And if so, how many more reinforcements?
Yeah, Leipzig, I think their team, interestingly enough, is very good. And I do have them down as a title challenger. The worry that I have a little bit is that they are a bit thin in midfield. I mean, Tyler Adams' problem was that he didn't get the sort of playing time that he was hoping for, right? And I think it was probably time for him to move on. Xaver Schlager comes into hopefully form a midfield duo with Konrad Leimer, who was rumored to join Bayern Munich. And Bayern Munich are really pushing to sign him. Nagelsmann really wants him. I personally don't think that all the drama around Konrad Leimer is worth it for either one of the clubs. He's a good player, but he's not going to necessarily make Leipzig worse or Bayern better, you know. And I am pretty sure that when he leaves, or if he leaves, then Leipzig will probably find someone, possibly in Salzburg, to take up that role. David Raum is coming in. That deal is on almost being closed up. Left back from Hoffenheim, a significant signing for around 30 million euros, and very, very good player, German national team player. So he's going to add significantly to this team, but you kind of feel that there's still work to be done. And I have the sense that they're almost going to wait with this throughout the summer, because the transfer window doesn't close until September 1st. And I have sort of the sense that they are still kind of waiting to see where they're going to have to plug holes. And they made a lot of money on a bunch of transfers, right? They sold Tyler Adams for 20 million. Nordi Mukiele today was announced for 12 million plus three to PSG. Heshan Wong was sold on a permanent transfer to Wolverhampton for, I think, 18 million. And then Brian Brobbey, who they signed on a free transfer last summer, was now sold back to Ajax for 16 million. Now that's a deal.
Yeah. That's good business right there.
That's
yeah.
Very good business. Well done. So there's a lot of money there. And they have a transfer plus of around 60 million right now. So there's money to be spent. And yeah. I think they will spend it, because on top of that, they also have a rich owner who would be willing to pay the right amount of money for any player available. And then, of course, the very big one is that they signed Christopher Nkunku to a long-term deal without an exit clause. I don't think many people saw that coming.
No, and I think most people would have expected him to make that big money move either now or next season. Maybe he still will next season, but obviously then it's going to cost them a lot more, which means even more money for Leipzig to spend. The sales that they have made so far, I think, stand out to me, because you mentioned, like, Adams wanted more playing time, wasn't getting as much. He sold for a good chunk of change. Heechan Hwang, another player that was on loan, and now it's permanent to Wolves. Brian Brobbey, definitely not, like, betting in immediately with Leipzig. So that's right there, like, close to 60 million euros or 55, 60 million euros for players who weren't really in the plans. And so that's where it seems odd. That's where my initial question felt odd asking it, but, like, It's a team that's sold a number of players for a decent amount of money, and at the same time, very few of those players were actually, I think, in the long-term plans. And so it seems like their overall core, their overall approach is pretty much unchanged. It's just where else they'll need to reinvest if they do lose Laimer or Guardiola was the other one I keep seeing linked with a move away.
Yeah, Guardiola is not going anywhere.
All right.
This is not my reporting, but it's Stefan Biankowski reported it. And I know who his source is. And I can say...
Is it Domenico Tedesco?
No, it's better than that. So okay. I know that he's not going anywhere.
All right. So with that in mind, then, do you feel like... Because it seems Dortmund have a couple questions. They'll need to figure some things out. I don't know if they will... Okay, let me ask you this. Between Dortmund and Leipzig, who do you think will be closer to Bayern Munich after the first, let's say, 2 months of the season?
It all depends on what's going on with Haller. But I think all three of them are going to be very close at the top.
Okay.
Because Bayern Munich are in a bit of transition. The signings that they've made are excellent, but you have to find the chemistry, right? They're going to be in a completely different setup, and that will make them vulnerable, I think. From what I've seen in training and in the test matches, the key pieces that they brought in will need time to get integrated. And that is where you have a chance, right? Leipzig, I think their first 11 at the moment is probably the one with the most chemistry. What was one of the big strengths last year was that they had so many options to come in on the bench. And this is where I think they need to do a bit of work, and which is where also the 60 million that you mentioned might come in handy, right? I'm really curious what they're doing with that money. And I think they're waiting for August to see what sort of deals to be had for the right piece. And I do think that they are in a position, and they showed this at times under Tedesco last year, where they had this insane run to actually do make the Champions League spots. And I do think that there is quite a lot there. But you know what? Those two are not the only ones who are going to look good at the start of the season.
Let's tease that. Let's take one more break and let's come back to hear who else you think will be good. Back in just one second. Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, we are back. Manuel, we set it up perfectly, or rather, you set it up perfectly, but let's continue. Who else do you think will be particularly strong, at the very least, to start the Bundesliga season?
We haven't talked about them at all, and it's Bayer Leverkusen.
Yep.
I mean, this is a team who managed to hold on to all their key pieces and added. Right? They added last winter already when they brought in Sadar Özmoun from Zenit. They kept Patrick Schick. They signed Adam Lossek, one of the most in-demand strikers.
Can we talk about him? Sorry to interrupt, but I am like, it is very rare for people who don't know much about him, because I didn't until I was preparing for this show. Over 100 appearances in four seasons for Sparta Prague, which is an achievement when you realize that he turned 19 yesterday. So most of that 20. Was before his 18th birthday. Or did he turn 20? Is he 20 years old?
But it's
now?
Still an achievement, because that means his career started at 16.
Yeah, that's a lot of experience for a young player. It sounds like you're pretty excited about him. What do you think he's going to bring to Leverkusen?
He's an excellent signing. And a lot of people thought that when he got signed that, oh, this is your Patrick Schick replacement. They're going to cash in on him. And it's like, they both check. Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's all it takes to replace a player. Just make sure they're of the same nationality.
It's like, good, well done. You figured out that they have the same passport. But no, they're very different. I think Adam Hossek is a sort of player profile that they have lacked since Kevin Volland left for Monaco. Maybe even with a way higher ceiling and a little bit more flexible in terms of what he can add. He's taller too, which means he's better in the air. And he kind of plays off a main striker a little bit. He can also play as an attacking midfielder or as a second striker. So he does add a lot of more depth to you, to your attack, right? He's definitely not a classic number nine like Patrick Schick. I mean, Patrick Schick, I went to the Leverkusen's final game and I'm six, as you know, I'm 6'5". I'm quite tall. Yep. And I stood next to Patrick Schick and I was like, oh my God, this guy is huge. This big guy. I mean, we're the same height pretty much. And he's just extremely fit, extremely strong. So Adam Hlasek is none of these things. he's far more dynamic. I don't want to say dynamic. I want to say more mobile, right? He's far more of a floating kind of striker. And he's someone who complements Patrick Schick rather than replaces him. And I think when you look at this and you look at all these players that they now have amazed, that's a lot of depth. And Moussa Diaby hasn't gone anywhere yet. And from what I'm hearing, they are asking for 70 million euros. And the teams that have sort of come in and asked about him, most prominently Newcastle United, he doesn't necessarily want to go there. So there's a higher chance of him being still here than him leaving. And then they're still working on this Mutrik deal from Shakhtar Donetsk, Ukrainian winger, right? It's very difficult because of the paperwork and Shakhtar Donetsk and all that. So we have to see whether that's actually going across the line or not. And then you have to remember Florian Wirtz is going to come back after the World Cup from his ACL and the World Cup, right, in November. So he'll be back for the second half of the season. I mean, that's a lot of depth in attack, and their team overall looks very good, and they looked very good towards the end of last year. And everyone is a year older. Everyone is a year more experienced. You have a center back group that also gained a lot of experience, whether it's Odilon Kusunu, Tapsoba, Piero Hinkapie, right? There's a lot of good pieces here. And I think no one really talks about them much because it's Leverkusen, so we just shrug them off. But they could be a team to watch this year.
Yeah, I mean, they seem it with the depth that you've mentioned, with the chemistry they have. It is just the case. I wrote this when I was coming up with my questions, that they're just that team that they're fascinating, but we never talk about them because yep. They're always in or around the top four, but they never feel like they're that team that's pushing Bayern Munich. They're going to take it to the last day. Maybe they'll end up winning the title. I think their last title was over a decade ago, but so was everyone else's. So that's not surprising, except for Bayern Munich, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's a team that they've made, one signing? We've already talked about them. Only one sale. It seems like they are poised to have that consistency and chemistry to hit the ground running. Do you feel like we have talked about the kind of most likely candidates for the top four already in those four teams?
Yeah, that's my top four. And Bayern will be in the top two. And one of those three will have a realistic chance of maybe beating them to the title. While I still think that Bayern's chance of winning the title is more than 60%. But I think there is competition there. Because all three competitors have gotten better. Even with Dortmund, if it's the worst case for Dortmund with Halle, I think they actually got better. Yes, they lose Erling Haaland, but Erling Haaland is the sort of player who scores a lot of goals, but doesn't necessarily improve the squad. And I think by them kind of spreading the load a little bit, they will actually become a better attacking team. And defensively, Dortmund have become way better. Way better. And that was their biggest weakness. And when you look at the signings, they look really good. Leipzig, I think they're not done, but when you look at what Tedesco did towards the end of the season, they look really strong. So I think the competition has gotten better. Bayern Munich have gotten better too, but that top four, all four teams have gotten significantly better. And it's going to be interesting to see whether the three below Bayern have gotten better enough to make it interesting. And I think for this to be a competitive league, those three all have to challenge Bayern at the same time, because Bayern Munich needs to drop points, right, at different places. And I think it's going to be interesting to see. And I think there is a chance that one of those three could do it. this year and finally dethrone Bayern Munich. It's going to happen eventually. It will happen. I mean, even Juventus, whose dominance seemed endless, eventually got dethroned. It's going to happen eventually, whether it's this year or next year. But I do think there is a chance because those other three teams have done a very, very, very good job in the transfer market so far.
Strangely, we've talked about the four teams that will be in the Champions League, but there is a fifth team that will also be in the Champions League this year from the Bundesliga because Eintracht Frankfurt won the Europa League. But that's the same Frankfurt team that finished 11th in the table with a negative goal difference. What are your expectations for them on the domestic side of things? Less so the Champions League, but do you think Frankfurt will be in a better position this Bundesliga campaign?
Well, Frankfurt just, you know, they're just going to focus on all the cup competition and win those to stay in Europe.
Or that. You could do that too, either way.
They just love the cup competition. Frankfurt is a great example of what a Bundesliga team should be able to achieve in the Europa League. 11th place teams in Germany should be able to compete for a Europa League title. It's been too long. They've finally done it, right? Someone other than Bayern Munich have won an international title for the Bundesliga. Now it needs to be a regular thing. And anyone saying, well, it's difficult, should look at Frankfurt and say, well, actually, no. You know, if you play in the Bundesliga, the chances are that you're one of the biggest teams in Europe because of the size and the income that you have. So, yeah, you should probably be competing for this. And, you know, Leverkusen, we just talked about, they haven't won silverware in a while. So if they drop out of the Champions League for whatever reason, if they don't win the Europa League, I can't see any excuses. And Frankfurt have sort of set the model for that. But I do think that I am actually really excited. They're bringing back Mario Götze. I think who still has something to prove and had two excellent years at PSV in the Netherlands and really regained his fitness. He's looking great. He's looking leaner. He's looking fitter. He's looking more dynamic. There's a lot of positivity around him. And I think he's giving them a real playmaking option. And then they added Lucas Alario, who I do think has something to prove in Germany as well after, you know, showing at times Leverkusen that he was a good center forward, but it never really hit off. And then Jens-Peter Hauge was signed on a permanent deal. Christian Jakic comes in as a defensive midfielder who was really highly rated in Croatia. So they've done a lot of really interesting things there. And I do think that they have, I think they're going to challenge for the top six for sure. Obviously, it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to handle the Champions League as well. But at the end of the day, I'm just excited Mario is back in the Bundesliga and I just want him to do well. You know, you just want him to do well, and we all want him to show that he's more than just a World Cup goal-winning player.
If they are able to sort of get one of those Europa League places, that could come at the expense of, say, Freiburg. We mentioned them previously in regards to Nico Schlotterbeck being sold for around 22 million euros. They've reinforced Ritsu Doan coming in, Japanese winger Matthias Ginter coming in, Daniel Kofi Kaire from St. Pauli. They finished sixth, as I said, qualified directly to the Europa League group stage this year. Will they have enough to compete, do you think, on both fronts, or do you think they will end up prioritizing the Bundesliga over everything else?
Yeah, and they have to prioritize the Bundesliga. I think that's the number one for them. Cool that they were able to bring back Matthias Ginter. Mm-hmm. This is a player who was also linked to Bayern Munich, and it's cool that they did it. And it's kind of like a really good, feels-good story. And Ritsu Doan is a really good player. I'm really looking forward to see him. But I think for Freiburg, it's always the goal is to avoid relegation, right? And then see what happens next. And I think Streich is not going to do it any differently this year, no matter what the signings were. And at the same time, I do think you look at Frankfurt last year in the Europa League and you look at Freiburg and you say, why not?
Yeah. I mean, I would be fine with that. Do you have any hope for Union Berlin making a run anywhere?
I mean, they got promoted. They qualified for the Conference League. And then we said, okay, that's going to be really hard for them playing in the Conference League and the Bundesliga. We all expected a drop off. And then instead, they just qualified for the Europa League next.
Yep, they did. They did sell Taiwo Awoniyi, but they've brought in Jordan Pefok, the American.
What's Ibachu? Which one is it? I'm still confused. Like,
I it's yeah, because when we first encountered him, he was Jordan Theosin Sibachu. Then he was Jordan Sibachu. Then I think he was PFOC. At least that's what's on the U.S. jersey. I don't know. I guess we'll have to see, wait and see what he has on his own jersey.
Because like I know German Bundesliga rules are quite strict about this. It has to be whatever it's in your passport.
Oh, then he'll be probably Sibachu would be my guess.
If yeah, I guess we'll see on match day one what it actually what we have to settle with.
All right, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. All right, but how do you think he fits in with Awoniyi gone? His 15 goals would need to be replaced. Do you feel like they're looking specifically to PFOC to fill that void?
Yes, he is the Awoniyi replacement.
All right, let's do it.
And a cool club for him to join, right? And I think for Union Berlin, that's a jackpot as well, because there was going to be a lot of U.S. eyeballs on a club that is getting a lot of attention abroad already because of who they are and what they have done and how they've gotten up in the ranks. And I think they're growing really quickly in Berlin as well. They're now the biggest team in Berlin in terms of membership. They've outgrown Hertha. And I think they're going to try to further underline this and become Berlin's team. And yeah, fair enough. I mean, if they are finishing up there again, I think they're firmly established in the Bundesliga. And I like what they have done. PFOC is a great signing. Jamie Lieveling is a good signing from Greuther Fürth. Morten Torsby comes in from Sampdoria. I'm curious about him. And then Diego Leite or Leich. Portuguese names are a struggle for me, so I apologize. But he comes in from Porto and on loan. And they've done some really interesting transfers. And they have this ability to sign players and make them better. Awoniyi is a great example, right? This, they brought him for very little money and sold him for 20 million euros in the end. And that just shows you that they have understood to sort of weaponize cheap deals and turning them into more money, which they then can turn into strengthening the team in various areas. And I think they've gotten better as well. And I really do think that Jordan PFOC or Sibachu is going to do really well in the league. And it's great because we've lost some Americans in the Bundesliga and we're now getting some extra ones. We're getting some new ones, right? And there's some other ones, of course, that have big years ahead of them in the league. And PFOC is one of them. So even though we lost Adams, we might lose Richards. The steal has oddly still not gone through. And we are gaining a couple new ones, and Sibachu is one of them.
What about Kevin Paredes at Wolfsburg?
Do you think that's probably the one. Yeah, that's the one that we were probably going to the next, right?
Yeah, yeah. I would love to hear your thoughts on Wolfsburg, specifically Kevin Paredes, but Wolfsburg in general, how you're thinking they're shaping up for the season.
So Bienkowski, my smart colleague, called them the biggest sleeper team in the league. He thinks that they're going to benefit the most from the World Cup. And the break there, because Niko Kovac is a great signing for them, by the way, as a head coach. I think that team fits him perfectly. He's the system that they've played, the is exactly what made him a success at Frankfurt. And so I think he's going to be a big success there. And I'm really looking forward. He has a point to prove too, right? After his time at Bayern. And there's a history of Wolfsburg signing former Bayern coaches and then doing really well. Felix Magath, of course, failed at Bayern, comes into Wolfsburg and wins the German title. And I'm not saying that's what Niko Kovac is going to do, but this is a team that is going to has a point to prove, will benefit from the World Cup break because they are not in an international competition, so they can use that time to sort of recuperate a bit. And Jakub Kaminski, they brought in a really interesting player from Lech Poznan and with an exciting profile. Kevin Paredes, of course. And then lots of people said, okay, well, this is a big money signing and all that. But I think everyone understood that he wasn't signed for last year. He was signed for this year, right? They just wanted to bring him in early so he could adapt. Sort of similar to what Bayern Munich with Alfonso Davies. Remember that? He comes in and then spends most of his first half year at the second team at Bayern. And then wasn't until the second year until he finally broke into the first squad and became who he was. I think that adaptation process is actually quite smart. So I think Wolfsburg, in my opinion, are a sleeper team. And not in my opinion, Stefan's, but I agree with him. So, yeah, that's a team to look out for.
Yeah, Wolfsburg, a team that maybe could be a sleeper this year. Very much not a sleeper last year. They had a rough one. So too did Hertha Berlin, stayed up after winning the second leg of the relegation playoff. But we've got Hertha still there. We've got Schalke and Bremen back in the league. Of those three clubs, Schalke, Bremen, and Hertha, who do you think will struggle the least and who do you think will struggle the most?
Yeah, we did a deep dive on the promoted teams, and I think the Werder and Schalke will have a lot of work to do this year to stay in the league. They got relegated at the worst possible moment during COVID, right? In the past, when a giant went down, they were able to keep most of their assets because financially they were in a much stronger position than all the other second division teams. But their problem was that they were already in financial distress, and then they go down, and in order to sort of financially survive, they had to sell all their best players. And Schalke just sold Ozan Kabak to Hoffenheim, right? And you'll see that those two teams will have a long and hard road back to be who they were when they got relegated. I do think that they both have a chance of staying in, Werder and Schalke. I hope that they both stay in because the league is better with them in it. But I do think that it's going to be difficult. And they have a gap to make up. The first 2 years are going to be really hard. So that actually means that Hertha are in a situation where they can mess up everything and go down. Because that's what Hertha do. I mean, this is such an odd one, right? The club was such a dumpster fire last year. For lack of ever had a determination. It's just everything that could go wrong went wrong. And with the one exception that they survived in the relegation playoffs, which I didn't think would happen, but they did it. I think Freddy Bobic has, the sporting director, has to show that he drew to the right conclusion. Sandro Schwarz comes in, and that was a bit of a controversial signing too, because Sandro Schwarz worked at Dynamo Moscow last year, and when Russia invaded Ukraine, didn't leave Russia. He finished his job there, still took the money. And he comes back. And that was seen with some consternation in Germany, in German press. And so he comes in now, and I guess he has to kind of make up for his failings. But Hertha is an interesting one to watch. I'm not sure what to make of all their transfers. Jonjo Kenny comes in from Everton. Chidera Ijuke comes in from CSKA Moscow, where I guess Sandro Schwarz saw him. Zonjic comes in from Birmingham City. Oremovic from Rubin Kazan, another player signed from Russia. I guess Sandro Schwarz scouted Russia and decided to take all the players from there. But I'm just not... We have this... You know Kinder, Tyler? The eggs?
Yeah, of
the
course.
Surprise thing in it?
Yeah.
We call it Kinder Überraschung in German. The surprise egg. Der Überraschungsei.
Oh man, I do love a Kinder egg though. So thank you for that. Now I'm kind of hungry.
You're welcome. I think so. Yeah, well, we'll see what's in the Hertha Überraschungsei this year.
Final couple questions. I'll get to rapid fire here. Basically about the Bundesliga business that's been done. First one: what is your favorite sale out of the Bundesliga for whatever reason?
Out.
Yeah, as in like outgoing transfer sold to another league.
Yeah, so you gave me these questions ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And I thought about this an entire podcast and before, and I'm still kind of struggling a little bit with it. Out is always hard because the best players you kind of want to keep in the league. Mm-hmm. And you sort of think, okay, well, what is a good sale, right?
Tyler Adams to Leeds. You can just say Tyler Adams to Leeds. That's fine.
I'm not sure that is a good sale.
for which party? For Adams, for Leeds, or for Leipzig?
For Adams.
Oh, boy. Uh-oh. I don't like this answer anymore.
Because he's a really good player. And are we sure Leeds are still in the Premier League when the dust settles next year?
Okay, all right. I mean, but at the very least, it's a player who wasn't getting a ton of minutes, who we would assume will get minutes. We'll find out if they're still in the Premier League. If not, maybe he goes right on back.
Maybe, okay, maybe I say Taibo Avoni. I think I like this transfer because here's a guy. He was part of the Liverpool loan army. He had various different places he went to. Did really well at Union Berlin. Earned a move back to the Premier League. Like, yes, it's only Nottingham, but he's going to earn a lot of money there, right? Union Berlin get 20 million euros for and make a handsome profit. I like that sort of deal because it makes everyone happy.
What about your favorite incoming transfer? What's been your favorite signing in the Bundesliga?
My favorite signing. I mean, I am excited about Sadio Mane coming. As a personality, I'm really curious to see how he's going to do in the Bundesliga. But I do think it's a little bit cheap to go for the biggest name. Because everyone can do that, right? It's another really tricky question. I mean, because it's obviously very easy to just go with Mane.
Well, let's just do that then. Because I think there's reasons for
Mario Götze.
Mario Götze, all right.
Yes,
all right,
actually, that's actually the one that I mean, I kind of alluded already earlier to it. But it is Mario Götze because I want him to do well. I want him to finally show this enormous potential that he's always had. We've seen it at PSV. It's there. And I want him to have a happy end.
Mm-hmm. And I guess ending on a not happy ending note, is there a signing or signings that you didn't like for whatever reason? Are there any transfers that you think were poor decisions by Bundesliga clubs?
Oh, man, there's going to be so many.
That's good. That's fine. There can be many.
There's always a lot where you just think, why, right? I think it's not done yet, but Konrad Leimer, if it goes through, that's so unnecessary. The whole drama that we have surrounding this transfer is just, why? Bayern Munich have Sabitzer, who, by the way, did amazing in training camp in the US. He worked his ass off really hard and looked great against City, looked great against DC United, and plays that very position. And so I'm just thinking, why? Why this transfer? It makes no sense. Oh, and it's not just Sabitzer, Gravenberg too. Bayern Munich signed an incredible player. I think if you Konrad Leimer, you look at this and say, okay, yeah, Nagelsmann really likes me, but where do I fit in? And Bayern Munich, I mean, this is 30 million euros. Why? You know, if you're really so determined to sign him, wait till next year when he's a free agent and assess your situation then. So if this goes through, this is a transfer where I kind of just need to roll my eyes a little bit.
Well, we will check back in with you later in the season to find out if you're still rolling your eyes on some of these transfers or anything that you liked or didn't like that has come to fruition. But for now, Manuel, I know you're quite busy. We established that in the beginning. So I will just say thank you again for taking the time. And one more time, can you plug the many, many endeavors you have going?
Yeah, so I work full time for Transfermarkt, and you can find all the latest transfer news on there. And thank you very much for reading, of course. And if you have any questions or input, it is actually a site where you are encouraged to do that. So please reach out, get registered. You know, everyone can register and have input. So please do that. And then Stefan Bienkowski and I do the gegenpressing. Stefan also works for Transfermarkt, so we're partners in crime and lots of endeavors. So Stefan Bienkowski and I do the Bundesliga gegenpressing podcast, and we launched a newsletter a couple of weeks ago. And you can find longer reads in our Substack. You can register. It's $5 a month or $45 for the year, and you get one article a week from Stefan, one article a week from me, and you get one podcast, exclusive podcast, and you get all the other podcasts ad-free. And so that's a new endeavor of ours. And it's basically the reason why we're doing this is it's really hard writing about the Bundesliga without writing about Bayern Munich all the time. Having said that, my last few Substacks were about Bayern because I was with the team, but there are certain topics that are just really hard to cover when it comes to German football. And this gives us an opportunity to do exactly that, to cover some of the stories that not necessarily rank well on search engine optimization or are over a certain word count that is optimal for Google. Or you probably know exactly what I'm talking about, Tyler, right? Mm-hmm. So it gives us the opportunity to sort of kind of like the athletic type of articles and be a bit more creative and be more in depth. And while also knowing that the people read it, A, giving us the funds to be able to do it, but B, also actually enjoy that sort of writing. So you can check that out. It's part of the Gegen Pressing podcast. And then I also do 5 columns for Forbes on the Bundesliga. And I believe those are still free, although I think there might be an article limit. But if you just read my 5, you should be okay.
Busy, busy man, yeah, is Manuel Veits. Manuel, thank you again for taking so much time to talk to me about the Bundesliga today.
Oh, it's a pleasure as always. And I'm really excited for the Super Cup on Saturday. I'm going to be there. So if you're there too, please come and say hello. I had lots of people come and say hello in DC and Green Bay, awesome, which was really nice. It's really nice hearing from people and also giving feedback, right? And that was really awesome. So I really appreciate listeners and readers and all that. So please come and say hello. Lovely. It's very much appreciated. And yeah, thanks for, as always, for having me. I always love chatting with you about all the stuff. So,
of course, man. My pleasure. Listeners, hopefully you enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking to you. I enjoyed talking to Manuel, as I always do. And we will talk to you again very soon. Yeah,